The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, hello there. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting all podcasts for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we're going to return to the September 2020 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month is Stories from the Open Road, and that's what we're going to get started on right now. Back roads and lost highways. North Carolina has earned its designation as the Good Roads State. Our freeways and rural two lanes carry us from the sand dunes of the Outer Banks to the switchbacks of the Great Smoky Mountains. They bind us together whether we're traveling solo or en route to a beloved family vacation spot. This month, we take to the open road to consider where we've been and where we're going. There is a photo here of a road which has sand blowing over it from the sand dunes, primarily the ones on the right-hand side, and the caption says state transportation workers must constantly sweep away the patches of sand that shift from Pea Island's dunes onto North Carolina Highway 12. Now, the first article in the series is entitled Riding My Thumb. There's a photo here on the left-hand side. You can guess what it's a picture of. It's not a photo. It's a painting of a young man dressed in jeans. He has a guitar in his left hand. We see him from the back up to the neck, and he has a red backpack on, and his right hand is extended with his sleeve rolled up, and his thumb is up in the air, and there's an old, perhaps VW bus that's rolling down the highway. Memories of hitchhiking across North Carolina and the United States in the 1970s never dimmed for this author, written by Philip Gerard. I hitchhiked because I was broke and wanted to see America. The America of midnight truckers and nomad surfers and Wild West cowboys. During the summer after high school, living in a tent on Hatteras Island, I got the bug, day tripping from Kitty Hawk to Ocracoke in the cars and trucks of strangers. In college, I worked multiple jobs to pay tuition and rent, and every summer I stuffed whatever leftover cash I had in my boot and hit the road. Hitchhiking was a common mode of transport for college kids headed home from break and soldiers on leave. The 1970s was a more trusting time. For to hitchhike is to adopt a core philosophical position, trust in strangers. And, of course, they must trust you on sight. Yes, it's possible that the next car to come along may be driven by an axe-murdering maniac, but you have to make an essential leap of faith. Through four seasons and some 10,000 miles of hitchhiking throughout the Carolinas, from coast to coast, from New England to Florida, through the eternal corn and wheat fields of the Midwest, and the rugged reaches of the desert west, I was rewarded in that faith. Now, even such abiding faith is not blind. I traveled by my always list. Remain alert. Never fall asleep on any ride. Carry enough cash for bus fare home and a couple of nights in a motel in case you can't hitch out or you get sick and need to lie up and recover. Make an exit strategy. A pretext to stop, even if a plan for defending yourself. I kept careful track of rest areas and truck stops as we passed them. Noticed what was around us on the highway. I never had to use an exit strategy. Put all of your stuff in one bag and watch that bag. I traveled with a red backpack and a guitar attached with a homemade harness. and I never left them unattended in somebody's vehicle or anywhere else. Keep clean, although I usually slept in the open in woods or thickets off the side of the roads. I washed every day in truck stop restrooms or creeks. No one wants to invite a scurvy-looking tramp into their car. Look as non-threatening as possible. I typically wore blue jeans and a flannel shirt, the standard college kid uniform in those days, and the old Gibson guitar announced that I was harmless. Carry water. You can go without food for days, but you must always have water. And my one never. Never get into any vehicle if your sixth sense tells you not to, even if nothing seems wrong. There are things that your body senses before your mind catches up. Strangely enough, on a jaunt home from spring break in Fort Lauderdale, I took a ride with three parolees from Huntsville, Texas, in an old Chevy Beater. They told me straight out who they were and hoped I had a couple of dollars to pitch in for gas. I gave them $8. I kept notebooks of my travels with sketchy entries like this one from the summer of 1975. Long wait to MGB, a Navy guy who took me to near Moyock, Carolina border. My next ride with that trip was aboard a lime green GMC motorhome, a futuristic 26-foot-long rolling spacecraft. I sat on a swivel chair as the intercoastal scenery scrawled past and sipped rum and cokes with two retired railroaders and their wives. A son-in-law was the designated driver. When they dropped me off in the darkness of Oregon Inlet Campground, I stepped out dizzily and sprawled flat on my face in the sand. Why did any of them stop for me? I once asked an old fellow who picked me up in a weathered pickup on a back road in Maryland. He told me, every man in this highway has a mother who loves him, and they aren't all bad sons. The hitchhike is to make instant friends who can disappear from your life a few miles down the road, yet stick in your memory for years. Like the young family who picked me up when I was headed to the Union Grove Fiddlers Convention. I scrambled back into the way back of their VW bug and played folk songs for their two restive children. How about the woman outside Nashville who sped past me on the interstate in a Cadillac doing 90 miles an hour, then screeched to a halt on the shoulder 50 yards ahead and waved me to come on. She'd seen my cowboy boots and then showed me hers, American bicentennial boots in red, white, and blue leather with bald eagles on the side. She drove as fast as she wanted, she said, because her father and brother were both on the highway patrol. She was sassy and funny and gave me the fastest ride I ever had. Or the lean cowboy who picked me up in San Bernardino. He, too, saw my boots, and he wanted to know if I could give him a line on a friend of his on the rodeo circuit. One summer in Northern California, I scored a ride with two bearded jazz musicians in a VW microbus. They smoked reefer and talked music all the way into Truckee, where the driver, an Allen Ginsberg lookalike, ignored a temporary barrier and turned onto the main street right into the head of the 4th of July parade. He slowed down, and the two stoned musicians waved out their windows as if they were the grand marshals. Sometimes the people who picked me up wanted me to help with the driving, like the guy ferrying a load of shrimp from the Gulf Coast in a refrigerated box truck. I drove through the Georgia night while he caught some shut-eye. And always the road unspoiled like an endless promise, the scenery scrubbed by salt wind or rock dust, contours of lush pasture or hardpan desert or rank tidal creeks, silver bays scalloped under a reaching breeze, or tobacco fields frozen in still, sun-drenched heat, the sky blistering with sun or stinging with silver needles of hard rain, the light changing from purple to azure to smoky gray. Each ride was a new song, a new story to learn, a new chance to tell any story about myself that I cared to, true or not. And somewhere around the next bend or the next lay a nighttime camp, a bed of earth, and a deep sleep softened by highway dreams. And now an afternoon and a tank of gas hanging around Hanging Rock. An end-of-summer trek along North Carolina Highway 66 in Stokes County provides plenty of kicks, as well as eats, and endless views of the Soratown Mountains, written by Sherry Castle. Nice picture here of some rocks jutting out over a bit of a valley, or some distance above the treetops below. And they really are jutting out. There's a big gap between them. But we're on one, well, the photographer is, and he's photographing a family on the other side. One of the people looks like they're out there too far where you shouldn't be, because if you drop off, you're not coming back. But that's their problem, not ours. From the summit of Hanging Rock, North Carolina Highway 66 is barely visible as it winds through the forests that carpet Stokes County. They are pretty accurate in that statement because I can't see it. The smoke lingering on North Carolina Highway 66 around John Brown's Country Store and Grill is the first clue that this is no ordinary Saturday. Known for its bustling short-order grill that serves burgers and hot dogs, fried thick-cut bologna and pork tenderloin, the family-run operation fires up its smokers out back a couple of times each season for Smoking Saturdays. Brian Tick Brown, who runs the store with his siblings Scott and Kim, tends the pork, chicken, and ribs that hikers pick up on their way to Hanging Rock 10 miles up the road. Passersby know the meat's done when Tick flips the switch on the outdoor sign that reads, "Smoking up a storm." About everybody that goes to Hanging Rock comes by here first, Tick says. The regulars know to bring a cooler to fill it with picnic supplies, snacks, and the store's renowned pimento cheese made by longtime employee Daniel Squint Mabe. Tick's parents started a little roadside stand that evolved into a small grocery and eventually added a grill, and the kids grew up right alongside the business. "We've changed over the years to keep up with customer needs," Tick says. "We still do. The way we stay open is to pay attention to our customers and be the place that they can find what they're looking for." The grocery area of the store isn't huge, but it's filled with a variety of items, from pantry supplies and fresh produce to country ham and homemade fried pies. It's easy to come in for one thing and quickly pick up an armload. There's an entire wall of sauces, preserves, pickles, and relishes, including a long shelf devoted to hot sauces and a line of salsas called As Good As It Gets, made in nearby Rural Hall. The Browns package several of their signature salads and spreads in grab-and-go deli containers, just the thing for packing a picnic. A few steps away are barrels of bulk candy, including old-time favorites like Mary Jane's, caramel creams, peanut butter bars, circus peanuts and orange slices, sweet treats for a scenic drive. Stacked next to the register are homemade bread and rolls and single servings of banana pudding and fruit cobbler. In the fall, people flock to John Brown's for its signature chicken stew, a serious tradition in Stokes County. The term chicken stew refers not only to the dish, but also the occasion where people gather to eat it. Tick explains, "It's unconscionable to turn down an invitation to a chicken stew. If you get three invitations, you go to all three and eat at all three, and then still stop by here for some more." No two Stokes County cooks use the same method for making their stew, which is traditionally cooked outdoors in big black pots over an open flame. The only constant is that pride and swagger are involved. Plus chicken, of course, but never vegetables. The grill's recipe for its beloved chicken stew, which the Browns serve about 10,000 gallons of each fall, is a closely guarded secret. All the Tick will say is that their recipe melds tradition and multi-generational practices from his family and his wife's family. "It's the best," he adds with a grin. Highway 66 is one of many winding two-way roads, or rather two-lane roads, that invite driving enthusiasts to explore Stokes County rolling hills and farmland, all set against the ever-present backdrop of the Soratown Mountains. The countryside is a big draw here, but the centerpiece of the region is Hanging Rock State Park. After Hanging Rock was named a state park in 1936, the Civilian Conservation Corps spent the next 7 years carving out the first hiking and climbing trails, building picnic areas and parking lots, and scooping out a 12-acre lake bed that was then filled with dammed creek water. I paused to see how dammed was spelled. I thought it was spelled wrong, but it's spelled D-A-M-M-E-D, dammed creek water. At the park's visitor center, rangers direct hikers to trails like the Moore's Wall Loop Trail, part of the Mountains to Sea Trail, and point out landmarks on the park's 8,000 acres from the center's observation deck. From here, the view is of green forest carpeting vales and hillsides, with smooth rock cliffs breaking through in spots suspended from the ridgeline, lending credence to the name Hanging Rock. In the distance, an old fire tower and observation deck up on the Moore's Knob mark the highest point in the park, and at 25,080 feet, it's higher than the elevation of Asheville, a point of pride for rangers. Hiking isn't the only reason to come to Stokes County, of course. Most people come to enjoy Hanging Rock, but people who enjoy the outdoors also want good music, good food, and good art, says Eddie McGee, Stokes County Arts Council Executive Director. The Arts Council occupies a half block of refurbished downtown Danbury storefronts that add up to a three-story multi-use space with sunny windows, tall walls for displaying art, and wooden floors that creak just enough to remind visitors that old buildings can have a new purpose. A few steps inside the front door, there's a coffee bar and an ice cream shop called Rocky's, named for Hanging Rock. A performance stage runs along the back wall, and you'd never know who might be calling a dance or playing a gig here. Eddie's also a musician who sings, plays guitar, and writes songs, so he's in the know about local acts to bring onto the stage, and a few nationally known performers as well. The rest of the main floor holds an art market that sells works from more than 100 local and regional artists. The community of Walnut Grove, a short, scenic drive from Danbury, draws collectors and browsers with a cluster of antique stores and knick-knack shops on Main Street. The largest, just plain country store, is a warren of displays and nooks filled with collectibles from 156 vendors. Vintage dishes, jewelry like your mama and aunts used to pin on their Sunday coats, tools that are old but still good as new. If Granny had it, we've got it, owner Kathy Dick says. She's probably right. Wares spill out onto the sidewalk and around the back, too. Whether you're hiking, shopping, or just taking in the scenery, a fitting and filling last stop on a big day in Stokes County is supper at the Hillbilly Hideaway in Walnut Cove. Rosanna Bray Jarvis is now the heart and soul of the business operated opened by her parents, Sam and Louise, in 1978. Rosanna is ever ready to share a story and a good guffaw as she moves through the dining room to check on everything and everyone. We like you to feel like you're eating at your grandma's house, Rosanna says. Service is family style, with servers pushing rolling carts laden with three meats, six vegetable side dishes, and homemade bread. The Hideaway is famous for its hoe cakes, made from Rosanna's mother's recipe for nestling biscuit scraps into a black iron skillet to bake, giving the bread a notably crisp and brown bottom crust. Hideaway bakers still make it by hand, and the hoe cakes are so popular that Rosanna claims people will elbow you over it. Each night's menu is fixed, so the only decision guests have to make is what to drink and whether to save room for dessert. Regulars know the lineup by heart, and newcomers can look up the particulars in advance online. Every inch of the restaurant is decorated with what Rosanna calls her theme walls, such as Wild West and Coca-Cola. Any bare wall space is covered in customer signatures, a tradition that began on day one. The story goes that the Hideaway's very first customer, who was the only customer for breakfast that day, asked if he could sign the wall for posterity. Rosanna's mother said that he could, but only if he carried a big bag of biscuits back to share with coworkers at his construction site. That was enough to lure about 40 lunch customers, and Rosanna says the restaurant hasn't had a slow day since. On Saturday nights, Hillbilly Hideaway hosts post-dinner live music in its music hall next door, where seats from old Thomas-built school buses are lined up in rows for the audience. The house band includes some of the musicians that played with Rosanna's dad back in the day. It's a three-hour show of gospel, traditional country, and bluegrass music, just like Mama and Daddy did when this was their home. "We'll feed you good and sing our heart out for you," Rosanna says. When the house lights come up, it's time to head home, letting your headlights lead the way after a fulfilling road trip to Stokes County. You're listening to Our State Magazine and the North Carolina Reading Service. If you have any comments, please call the studios, 919-781-1973. And now I see we have about 8 minutes left for a nine-minute article, so we're going to skip that and jump to page 48 to see what we find there that we might read in 7 minutes, and then we'll go from there and have less of a problem. How about The Ramblin' Man? Every month, T. Edward Nickens roams and writes for our Carolina, about our Carolina countryside. This time he's writing A Time to Fly. As the seasons turn, migratory birds and restless humans have something in common, the urge to spread our wings in search of someplace new. Turns out that feeling has a name. On the beach, the sanderlings mass along the water's edge. It's the first time I've noticed their growing numbers. A late summer swelling from a few scattered birds, picking at coquinas and sand crabs to small blankets of birds, huddled together and moving nearly as one, ebbing and flowing with each wave that washes the beach. More shorebirds strafe the breakers a few yards away, scattered flocks of dunlins and red knots flying impossibly low to the water to glean the unseen lift from the air compressed between wing and sea. I watch them and smile. This is one of my favorite times of year. There's a fullness in the atmosphere, a pregnant suggestion that something is happening, something shifting. The world itself seems on the verge. This is the season of movement and change and transformation. For the shorebirds on the beach herald the coming feathered waves, the hawks and their smudgy gyres overhead, the black ducks and blue-winged teal and redheads soon to wing through marshes. It's a time of urgency and commotion. It's the season of zagunrui. Well, didn't quite pronounce it right. They tell me in the next sentence how to do it. What a delicious word this is! Zakgunruha. Zakgunruha. It might not gently roll off the tongue, but its meaning is just as beguiling as the funky pronunciation. It comes from a mashup of two German words, Zug, referring to a migration or a movement, and Unruhe, meaning restlessness. Together they refer to the migratory restlessness experienced by birds on the cusp of the turning seasons. Zungunruhe is an innate ineluctable biological stirring that it is time to move, time to change, time to fly. Prompted by short days and changes in air pressure and the availability of food, birds feel the pull of distant places. Studies have shown how ingrained and hardwired these urgings are in migratory birds. Held in paper-lined cages, floored with ink pads, wild birds will orient themselves naturally toward their migratory routes. Their tiny tracks coalesce in a pattern that follows their wild counterparts. Cage a wild migratory bird during the shortened days of autumn, and it will launch itself against its wire prison, frantic for places south. They cannot help themselves. It's time to fly. Zgungrua. On the beach, the phenomenon makes itself known to the impressive pageantry. So too in the mountains, where August's drip, drip, drip of migrating hawks, eagles, vultures, and other birds of prey turn into a veritable river of raptors by late September. But elsewhere, in inland forests and bottomland swamps, along urban greenways, and in practically every backyard in North Carolina, fall migrations are decidedly more nuanced than the colorful processions of April and May. Whereas birds in the spring dress to impress with bright, mate-attracting garb, most birds in the fall pull on their frumpy overcoats. It takes a lot of energy to produce a riotous red topknot or a flashy wing patch. If love isn't on the menu, it's not really worth the work. And in the fall, jewels like buntings and tanagers wear the avian equivalent of sweatpants and baggy pajamas. Goldfinches turn drab as old oak leaves. Even loons lose their onyx luster. Shorn of their fancy garb, these birds nonetheless sweep across North Carolina in massive flights. Most pass in the cool of night when the air is less turbulent and more conducive to clicking off the miles. They come and they go with little fanfare and hardly any singing. Southward ever, pulled by restlessness. Most of us, I think, have felt a bit of Zungunrua at one time or another. Perhaps in humans, it's akin to the shivers that grow up your spine when a rabbit runs over your grave, as the old southern saw goes. And this year, more so than ever, we humans might recognize deeply the bird's yearning, this restiveness, this desire to launch into some new adventure or journey. We've all spent too much time of late cooped up and disconnected. We all feel the caged bird's unease. One of my most favorite memories as a young father is of watching a tiny portion of this global pageant. At dusk, my children and I would stretch out in the middle of the sidewalk in front of the house. Marky's brown curls on one shoulder, Jack's blonde bangs on the other. We'd count bats and find dinosaur shapes in the clouds. The heat that collected all day on the sidewalk would warm our backs as the evening air cooled all around. I didn't realize it at the time. I'd not yet heard of the concept, but we were celebrating Zungunrua, the zigzagging bats and cumulus clouds triceratops kept Margy and Jack engaged. But I lay there hoping for a different visitation. Typically, I'd hear them first, a raspy black scimitar, or raspy painting, P-E-E-N-T-I-N-G, call, high over the oaks, then black scimitar shapes against clouds tinged with sunset pinks. High over Raleigh, the nighthawks would soar in great swooping flights, stalking insects on the wing. Theirs is one of the longest migratory flights of any North American bird species, as many as 4,000 one-way miles toward the southernmost corners of South America. That they visited the sky above my little inner city sidewalk seemed a miracle. And that is all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine, and I hope you enjoyed it, and you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Company, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions, call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.